Good mornings. I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, the class of 2025 is facing a financial landscape full of uncertainties. A new study reveals how and what this generation thinks about making it in the world that they are inheriting. Also this morning, they're calling it strolling thunder. Moms and their babies from across the country are on Capitol Hill today, advocating for policies impacting their families that are at the center of the current funding debate in Congress. And who doesn't want a great-looking, healthy lawn to enjoy all spring and summer long? But how do you make it happen without spending a fortune? This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Tuesday, May 20th, 2025. Hey, make sure you buckle up when you are traveling this Memorial Day weekend. We mentioned yesterday that AAA is anticipating record numbers of people traveling for the Memorial Day weekend. Most of those people will be hitting the road, and the Ohio State Highway Patrol is joining authorities in neighboring states for a seatbelt enforcement campaign, part of the Six State Trooper Project aimed at reducing traffic fatalities. Over 8,000 seatbelt citations were issued across the participating states during last year's campaign, with Ohio accounting for nearly 3,500 of those tickets. So they aren't messing around. The enforcement effort happening alongside the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration's Click It or Ticket campaign. So make sure you buckle up when you are traveling for the Memorial Day weekend. I just want to throw that out there. Speaking of travel, you saw this story, perhaps. Vice President J.D. Vance met with Pope Leo XIV. What was it, over the weekend? Now, you remember, J.D. Vance was the last public official to meet with Pope Francis before he passed away. So some people were speculating maybe he was the unlucky omen there, but so I don't know. Pope Leo was a little nervous about meeting with J.D. Vance. No, I'm just kidding. But I thought it was interesting, a story that I saw on the Newswire. Apparently, the vice president gave the Pope a very special gift in meeting with Leo at the Vatican. He presented him with a Chicago Bears jersey with the name Pope Leo XIV on the back. Hey, being Pope has its perks. You get these great gifts. Of course, Pope Leo, a Chicago native, and he responded to receiving the gift by telling the vice president, good choice. He also delivered the pontiff a letter from President Trump and First Lady Melania, inviting him to visit the White House. So I don't know if he's planning on doing that, but the invitation has been extended. And speaking of sports gifts, he could have, J.D. Vance, if he really wanted to do something special for the Pope. I mean, the Chicago Bears jersey is great, but a Chicago Bulls jersey and shorts worn by NBA icon Michael Jordan have been sold at auction. Now, if the vice president really wanted to do something, give the Pope a gift, you know, that would be pretty cool. Bulls jersey and shorts worn by Michael Jordan. Of course, they sold at auction for $2.6 million. So that would be a pricey gift. $2.6 million for a game-worn uniform by Michael Jordan. It was worn by Jordan during the 92-93 season, which is the year of the Bulls' first championship. So it did sell for less than a Jordan-worn jersey from the first game of the 1998 NBA Finals that sold a couple of years ago for $10.1 million. So, 2.6, a veritable bargain. That's, J.D. Vance didn't give the Pope that. Could have. By the way, speaking of basketball, I got to tell you about a completely random thing that happened to me yesterday. So, I'm on my phone. It was yesterday afternoon, and I was just, you know, sitting on the couch, not doing much of anything. So I decided to start scrolling through Facebook, as many of us do, right? When we're bored and we have nothing else going on and just, I'm going to check Facebook. So I'm scrolling through my social media feed on my phone. And you know how Facebook has this thing, if you scroll far enough down, it gives you friend suggestions, people you might want to add to your social circle. It says people you may know, right? People you may know is based on the friends of people that you are friends with. And so I get to the section where it says people you may know, people that is suggesting that I reach out to and friend on Facebook. And you know, the first one was Clark Kellogg, the former Ohio State basketball star who is now part of the lead studio team for CBS college basketball coverage. And I think he does some color analyst on some of the games too, but mostly he's in the studio during March Madness. Clark Kellogg, that Clark Kellogg. And it wasn't his fan page. It was his personal page that pops up on my list of people you may know. And I'm thinking, why? It's just talk about completely random. So I sent a friend request. I mean, what the heck? Facebook says he's somebody I might know. I don't think I know him, but beyond watching him on TV during basketball coverage and March Madness. But so I sent a friend request. As of right now, he has not responded, but I will let you know if he does. That's a completely random thing that happened to me yesterday. It was his personal page. I don't know how often he's on Facebook. He only has 150 friends. So I figured, he's got some catching up to do. So I'd do my part. See if he responds. Okay. Couple of other items here. Among the first things that you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. The other day we were talking about, and I think this was Friday, we were talking about the pests that could spread disease to your pets. You want to make sure that they are on flea and tick medication, flea and tick treatments, heartworm medication, all of that. Researchers at Dartmouth College have discovered that even though the tick population in this country has pretty much remained steady, the percentage of those pests that are infected with diseases that could affect your pets, could affect you, the percentage that are infected with disease has risen dramatically. 31% of adult deer ticks carried Lyme disease in 2007. That percentage increased to 54% in 2021, and presumably has continued to go up. And that means that tick bites carry a higher risk of making you sick this summer. So just to underscore, again, we were talking about this a few days ago, and I saw this on the Newswire, kind of underscored the importance of it. Deer ticks also making their way further north as climate becomes more favorable to them, and we were talking about that as well. So again, just to underscore what we were talking about the other day, it's not so much that there are more ticks out there, but more of them are infected with disease. So something to keep in mind for your pets and for yourself as we come into that time of year. And I saw this story that I thought I would share because this is one of those stories that you want to remember, keep in mind if you have a bad day today, because everybody has those days. And if you're having a bad day today, maybe not yet. It's maybe too early for you to have a bad day yet. But if something, happens today and you think, oh, man, just remember this story and remember, it could always be worse. Someone in the control tower at O'Hare International Airport spotted a strange object in a danger zone recently. It turned out to be a DoorDash driver. That's right. The delivery driver reportedly accidentally drove into an unauthorized secure area at O'Hare and went for miles in these restricted spaces trying to figure out where he was supposed to be to deliver his order. his DoorDash order. Apparently, he even crossed at least one runway in the process. He was actually on the runway. Fortunately, no one was injured. No charges are being filed because it looks like the driver was really just trying to get the food to the right place. There was no ill intent here. He just got lost. He genuinely got lost. But the report does not say who he was supposed to be delivering food to or whether the meal eventually made it to its intended final destination. But I saw that story and I'm thinking to myself, now there is a perfect story that demonstrates no matter how bad your day is, it could always be worse. If you think you're having a bad day, at least that hasn't happened to you. So you can take solace in that if you find yourself having a bad day today. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Tuesday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather, mostly cloudy today with showers developing, a high in the low 60s. Showers tonight, low in the mid-50s. Authorities say an 18-year-old passenger on a motorcycle was killed in a crash in Tiffin. The crash happened at the intersection of West Market Street and Benner Street when a motorcycle that was eastbound on Market Street collided with a vehicle traveling northbound on Benner Street. Police say an 18-year-old passenger on the motorcycle was declared deceased at the scene, while the driver of the motorcycle sustained critical injuries and was transported by Life Flight to a Toledo hospital. The driver of the other vehicle did not sustain any visible injuries and was treated at the scene. The Tiffin Police Department is conducting the investigation with assistance from the Ohio State Highway Patrol. The Ohio Senate has voted to ban ranked choice voting.
The Ohio Senate voted 27-5 to ban ranked choice voting at the state level. Senate Bill 63 goes one step further by removing state funding to local government that employ this voting practice. That system would allow voters to rank the candidates in order of preference, and a point system would determine the winner. Practice began in Ashtabula but hasn't been used in years. Opponents say it confuses the election process and impedes the concept of one person, one vote. The measure received bipartisan support.
ONN's Jay Plyburn reporting. The Blanchard Valley Health System Auxiliary recently awarded 11 $1,000 scholarships to students in Hancock and surrounding counties interested in pursuing a health-related career. The scholarship winners are from Finley High School, Liberty Benton High School, Bluffton High School, Van Buren High School, Arlington High School, and Macomb High School. Monies for the scholarship fund are derived from the annual membership dues contributed by auxiliary members. You can see pictures of the scholarship winners and learn more about the Blanchard Valley Health System Auxiliary Scholarships and other scholarships offered through Blanchard Valley Health System in this story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
So as graduation season is now in full swing, the class of 2025 is facing an uncertain financial landscape. Intuit recently commissioned a survey on how this generation is thinking about money and success and making it in the world that they are going out into. And joining us this morning is financial literacy professional and Intuit financial advocate Marissa Kazim-Potts with some practical tips to help these graduates set themselves up for success. And Marissa, what did you learn from this survey about how these recent and soon-to-be graduates are feeling when it comes to their finances?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, congrats to the class of 2025.
Absolutely.
Intuit's Prosperity Index Survey. We're calling it the Lifing Edition because we recognize graduation is a huge milestone for this group. But it also means young adults are lifing for the first time. They're negotiating first-time job offers, building credit, maybe paying off student loan debt. But our survey found that cost of living is the number one financial concern for this group at 98%, followed by job security at 87%. And we also found that 75% of folks are hesitant to set long-term financial goals. So think about, maybe putting away money every month to buy a car or even think about home ownership. This feels out of reach to this generation.
What are some smart first steps then that these grads can take to set themselves up for financial success, given that these are their top concerns?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, building healthy financial habits is all about keeping your money in check and your mind at ease. So think about empowering yourself with education. I also like to give a few easy tips that doesn't have to be daunting, but the first is to make a money day. Set aside intentional time every week, maybe 10 to 15 minutes to review your bank account or your credit card statements to ensure everything looks in tip top. Nothing looks out of place, and the spending is exactly what you remember it to be. Even take this time to financially educate yourself with free tools like Intuit for Education. The second is to build an emergency fund. All of us can save more. But even putting away $5, $10, maybe $15 a month in an automatic transfer into savings can help you build that fund that we all might need one day. The third tip is talking about money within your community. So maybe you're speaking to peers, colleagues, people who are your older sister or older brother, just saying, hey, I'm going through these financial hurdles. You'll find that everyone's on a financial journey.
Yeah.
And the more you talk about money, the more comfortable you're with it.
Yeah. And I remember we were talking about this a couple of weeks ago, the fact that for this generation, they are much more open to having those conversations than maybe we were when we were that age. So that actually is a very good thing. It was interesting you mentioned job security. So these are not all, I mean, obviously there's a financial component to that, but you know, they're thinking big picture and a wide ranging scope on this. I know this is kind of the generation of the side hustle. They are everywhere these days. Do they actually pay off? Is this something that grads should be looking at, or do they have unrealistic expectations?
Well, I can certainly attest to the fact that side hustles can pay off. I had one to pay off a large sum of student loan debt. But the difference is that Gen Z define themselves as multi-hyphenate professionals. And what I mean by that is side hustling isn't just a nice to have anymore. It's a part of the financial plan for this generation. Our study revealed that over 50% of Gen Z want 2 to 3 income streams in the next 5 years.
Wow.
And 26% already have a side hustle.
Are there, that actually kind of leads to the next question that I had, because it would seem to me, and again, I'm from a different generation, so maybe I'm a little out of touch here, but it would seem to me that maybe that expectation of having so many revenue streams is maybe a little bit unrealistic. So the question is, are there some unrealistic expectations that graduates have when it comes to their finances?
I think that folks can manage these multiple income streams because we have technology at our fingertips today. So what that means is someone might have, you know, a regular 9-to-5 as their main source of income. And on the side, perhaps they decide to do DoorDash or Instacart, or perhaps they sell, you know, the crafts they make on the weekend at the farmer's market. It can run the gamut, but we've got such an immense amount of technology at our disposal that younger folks are finding ways to make multiple income streams work.
When we mention unrealistic expectations, it strikes me those can be good or bad. I'm curious, are there some expectations that you find young people have where the reality is maybe not as dire as perhaps they perceive it to be?
I think a lot of young folks are looking into wanting things, but they're not wanting the same things that older generations wanted. So those milestones like home ownership or starting a family have transformed. We found that in our survey, folks just want to have peace over paychecks. So they're creating that realistic and flexible life that works for them. So having just enough to live a comfortable life that feels prosperous is what is in reach for them. And you're finding that the things that past generations found, you know, as the benchmark to success isn't the same definition as prosperity today or financial success today for Gen Z. So they're creating realistic outcomes for themselves by making the money they need to feel comfortable and have flexible schedules.
You mentioned earlier some basic tips that can help get young people started on the right path and setting up these good financial habits that hopefully will serve them well through their entire life, but starting off on the right note. What is one piece of financial advice that you wish that every graduate knew right from day one?
I can't stress it enough. Financial education, empowering themselves with the opportunity to learn the foundations of finances, especially when they're just starting out, although it's never too late for anyone.
Right.
But that's why we launched Intuit.com/lifing. That's LISEING at Intuit.com, which is INTUIT.com. And it's a new hub built to help Gen Z life with confidence.
You know, that is one really positive aspect of, you know, being the class of 2025 as opposed to generations ago. This financial education material, financial literacy material, is available to everyone, and it's just a couple of clicks away.
That's right. And those, you know, it's never too late. Like I said, we can all learn a little bit of financial education.
Certainly no question there. Again, a financial literacy professional and Intuit financial advocate Marissa Kazempotz with us this morning. We mentioned the report and, you know, some of the advice, some of the resources you have. Where do folks learn more?
Intuit.com, or they can hit that follow button at Intuit on Instagram to learn more.
Marissa, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
It will be quite a sight in Washington, D.C. today as families from every state with their babies in their strollers will participate in something called Strolling Thunder. Clever name. They are calling on Congress to prioritize issues impacting infants and toddlers. And of course, as you might expect, many of the issues they have in the crosshairs are the same that are the ones at the center of the current funding debate in Congress. The organization behind this event is called Zero to Three, which bills itself as the nation's largest childhood advocacy nonprofit organization. And yesterday, we spoke with Zero to Three Chief Policy Officer Melissa Boteach, along with Rochelle Dumas, an Ohio mom who is participating in today's demonstration. Melissa, let me start with you. When you talk about issues that impact infants and toddlers, what would those be?
So we're talking about the policies that support strong families, healthy kids, and high-quality early learning experiences. And so practically speaking, what that means is programs like Medicaid, which cover over 40% of births in this country, programs like the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, which ensures that 1.3 million people in Ohio can afford their groceries. And it means programs like Head Start, Early Head Start, and child care, so that families can ensure that their babies and toddlers have really good early learning experiences that provide a strong foundation for the rest of their lives.
And you have some data on sort of the state of babies in Ohio. What are the numbers that you believe most highlight the needs in our state?
Ohio has a lot at stake in really this week and in the coming weeks with the debates going on in Congress. Mm-hmm. The House voted out of the Budget Committee a bill that would dramatically slash Medicaid and the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. For reference, Medicaid pays for 39% of births in Ohio, and more than 62% of people who receive SNAP in Ohio are in families with children. And what this actually means for the state budget is even greater, because in addition to providing health insurance to many, many children and families, Medicaid is a huge source of funding in the Ohio state budget. And so if this program gets slashed, as it is currently on the chopping block, that means that Ohio's budget is going to be really in deep trouble. And that will mean cuts in things like K-12 education and child care and in other services that people in Ohio rely on. And so this is actually a really high stakes moment for these families coming with their babies to Washington, D.C. and explaining what is at stake as Congress debates this bill.
Now, Rochelle, let me bring you into the conversation here. Talk about why you felt it was important to be a part of this event.
Absolutely. Because just as Melissa said, the cuts to Medicaid is impacting us all, but it's deeply personal for me. Before I actually had my baby, Nazaire, I had 9 pregnancy losses. I had 8 miscarriages and 1 stillbirth and a host of trauma. And while I did, while he did inherit my love, he also inherited the weight of my past losses and my trauma. I was diagnosed with PTSD, depression, and anxiety after I gave birth. And during that postpartum period, it impacts him as well. And when we talk about Medicaid cuts, we're talking about cuts to different healthcare services, specifically mental health services for our children. So Nazaire will not be able to have access to these programs because most Americans live paycheck to paycheck. And on average, in order to get mental health services, it can cost anywhere between $80 and $200+ per session. And when we talk about postpartum mood and anxiety disorders, we're talking about billions, upwards of $14 billion annually spent in the United States to treat this. And let's also talk about the long-term impact of a mom having different disorders, disorders, and how it impacts a baby and a toddler. It can lead to more NICU stays, ER visits, and pediatric behavioral health care issues and developmental issues such as speech delays, which Nazaire does have. So when we talk about cutting Medicaid, it is so, so important to urge Congress to stop and oppose these cuts because our babies need it more than ever.
Now, Melissa, is the goal of this to simply raise the awareness factor on Congress and call attention to these? Are you advocating for specific policies?
So we are asking Congress to protect Medicaid, to protect SNAP, and to, you know, invest in babies and toddlers. And because, you know, right now those are issues that are very much in front of them, mm-hmm. our hope is that the stories of people like Rachel, of people of every single family coming from every single state, which touch on Medicaid, SNAP, Head Start, early Head Start, that there is a faith behind the number. Because I can, you know, spout off statistics for states and congressional districts about how many people are affected and how this will hit the state budget.
Right.
But at the end of the day, it's families like Rachel who are explaining what this means for their baby, what this means for their family. What it means for their community, that hopefully puts these issues front of mind as members of Congress are making decisions.
As you mentioned, a lot of these issues are matters that Congress is actively working on right now in this big omnibus bill. But some will argue that many of these programs for children and families can be better managed at the state level rather than the federal level. Are they wrong?
If these cuts go through, what it amounts to is a giant cost shift to states. And in the context of something like Ohio's budget, what that means is that you're getting less money and more responsibility of people to cover, which means cuts either to people's health care or in K-12 schools or in child care services or in foster care or other things that people rely on. This is a program, Medicaid, that, I mean, you can go by the data, you can listen to family stories that for decades has ensured that people get the preventative services they need, the health care they need, and it's a partnership with the state. You know, states contribute some of their own funding and administer, et cetera. So it's already getting a lot of support and engagement with the state level. What they're talking about doing is cutting the federal funding and adding new bureaucracy and requirements in ways that will make it much harder for families to access it.
As we mentioned, Strolling Thunder is the brainchild of the organization 0 to 3. Where do folks learn more about your organization and the way you advocate for these issues?
You can go to www.0to3.org. That's www.0to3.org to get information about babies and toddlers and their brain development to get information about what's happening in Congress and to take action.
Melissa, Rochelle, thank you both for taking the time this morning. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having
us. Thank you for having us.
Our conversation yesterday with Melissa Boteach, Chief Policy Officer of the organization 0-3, and Rochelle Dumas, an Ohio mom who is participating in today's Strolling Thunder demonstration in Washington, D.C., as the debate over federal spending and the funding of programs that they say are critical for families and children, especially low-income families and children. That event taking place today on Capitol Hill. If you want to learn more, you can check our webpage. Go to goodmornings.net.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
Now, here's something you don't hear about every day. A porch pirate with a conscience. But that's what we do in the broken news, the odd and unusual side of the headlines. And this is definitely unusual, but in a good way, I guess. Days after a package containing a $1,200 doctoral cap and gown from George Mason University was taken from the home of Dr. Leah Carrington Boney, it mysteriously showed back up on her sidewalk. So she had this, the cap and gown. I said $1,200 cap and gown for the doctoral program, George Mason University. She had it ordered, was delivered, and then swiped from her porch, but then it was returned. She is crediting news reports about the theft, which was recorded by her doorbell camera only minutes after the delivery, as the likely reason why the person returned his or her ill-gotten gain. All the publicity for the porch pirate must have heard about it, and it, because I don't think, at least according to the report, the report seems to imply that the box wasn't even opened. But the news reports are out there, and police say this may be the first instance they've come across where a porch pirate victim actually got their items back. So, and just in time for the graduation ceremony. So, porch piracy, a bad thing, but at least the thief had a conscience. We've had a lot of unusual thefts in the broken news over the years. Here's another one. A hungry robber burst into a Vancouver restaurant last month. In surveillance footage, the ski mask wearing thief can be seen wielding a machete as he storms behind the counter of the restaurant, thoroughly terrifying the employees who managed to escape, as the man slices into the meat that was there roasting on the spit in the restaurant. He ended up making off with a few pounds of barbecue. And according to the restaurant owner, Ali Boreas, he even took a couple of sauces, like, you know, bottles of sauce, barbecue sauce for the meat. He did, however, forget to take the pita bread. Well, if you're going to go through all of that trouble and then forget the pita bread, I mean, you got to work on your burglary skills there. The suspect was arrested later that night and has since been charged with robbery and possession of a weapon for a dangerous purpose. Wasn't trying to hurt anyone. He was just trying to get some meat. Let's see. Speaking of dumb criminals. Oh, this is a follow-up story. First of all, we get to this story. It is a follow-up. You remember the story about the theft of that 18-karat gold toilet from Blenheim Palace in England. So this happened several years ago, I guess like 6 years ago. And then a few months ago, a few weeks ago, I guess, there was a follow-up story about one of the members of the gang that made off of the toilet that was in court. Well, now a follow-up to that. Frederick Doe has received a suspended sentence for his involvement in the theft. He was previously found guilty of conspiracy to transfer criminal property during the theft of the Golden Toilet back in 2019. However, Judge Ian Pringle has ruled that others who were more involved in the heist may have taken advantage of Mr. Doe's good nature. Said the judge, quote, "You had no personal gain, you had limited involvement in the scheme, and you were involved only for a short period." Apparently, Mr. Doe had given information to one of the actual thieves on who they could sell the golden toilet to. Because, I mean, you'd need that information if you had stolen a golden toilet. I would imagine that's not just something that you can fence anywhere. You got to find a very specific buyer, and apparently Mr. Doe had someone in mind and shared that information with the actual thieves. He's still guilty of being part of the conspiracy, but he was only a minor part, said the judge, and he has been sentenced to a suspended sentence. He does have to complete 240 hours of community service work. So maybe cleaning toilets would be a good thing that he could... let's see. And here's this story. You talk about dumb criminals. This is out of Columbus, Georgia. A teenager has been accused of cashing over $500,000 in fake checks. Police say William Chadwick Jones opened a business account with Synovus Bank, deposited 5 fake checks via mobile deposit totaling $545,000, and then moved those funds through wire transfers and platforms like Zelle and moved the money to other accounts before the bank caught on that the checks were fake. $500,000. What makes this story worthy of the broken news? Number one, apparently some of the ill-gotten money, some of the stolen money, was used to pay a lawyer who was representing the teenager in a previous fraud case. They stole the money because he needed to pay his lawyer for the previous fraud case. Lawyer's going to have a hard time making the case that he's learned his lesson there. And Mr. Jones was caught driving a Porsche when he was apprehended by police. So he was driving a Porsche. So apparently he has a little bit to learn about the number one rule of stealing $500,000. And that is try to remain inconspicuous, as inconspicuous as possible. That was the part that he didn't get. He's probably shocked. How in the world did you catch me? Yeah. And finally, in the broken news this morning, this is kind of a fun story. A participant in the recent Brooklyn Half Marathon, Brooklyn, New York, was running in the hopes of walking down the aisle, apparently. This is a story in the New York Post. 28-year-old Tess Tregellis took part in the Brooklyn Half Marathon, and she ran the race in a wedding gown. Apparently, she told reporters she thought maybe it might lead her to meeting the one. She might meet Mr. Right. While she did cross the finish line in about 2.5 hours, she did so without any proposals. So, didn't work. She said maybe the guys just felt intimidated. I don't know. her race getup included a sign that said "just hopeful" on the a sign taped to the back of her dress instead of "just married." Just hopeful. even though she didn't get a proposal, she said it wasn't a total waste of time. A lot of people asked to take my picture, and I felt so loved. Kind of like a celebrity. She said it also opens up a lot of conversation and you get to know all of the people who are running alongside of you. So she made some new friends. but no proposals. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
This is Ed Vlentz with OSU Extension. It's planting season. Drivers will be sharing roads with tractors and farm machinery. Be alert for slow-moving vehicles, especially on roads with limited visibility. Watch out for equipment pulling in and out of fields. Drivers and farmers, let's work together this spring to keep our roads safe and accident-free.
This message from WFIN and 95.5 FM.
And now, your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. As we come up on summer travel season, a new survey of 2,000 adults finds that one-third of Americans, one in three of us, have gone on a journey just for the food. Now, we're not talking about making a decision on where you go for a vacation based on the cuisine. We're talking about actually traveling specifically for the food. 22% have crossed state lines for a certain dish that they can't get at home, and 10% have even gone to another country just to partake in the food. An additional 34% admit that although they have not yet hopped in the car or on a plane for a taste of their favorite food, they have considered it and would do so if given the opportunity. We love our food. 56% say that when they travel, they leave room in their suitcase to bring foreign snacks back home. And 41% say that they would purchase another bag to stash their snacks if necessary. So we actually had to buy another suitcase just to bring back all of the snacks and food from another out of state or another country. By the way, when it comes to international flavors, this is a survey from Tucker Research. They found that respondents were most interested in trying flavors from Italy, Mexico, and Japan. Those are the top three countries whose cuisine we want to, which kind of makes sense. I mean, Italian food, Mexican food, Japanese food, all very popular in this country. But those are the top three that we would want, you know, the authentic stuff, if we could. Those are the top cuisines. Then the survey also asked the 42% of those in the survey who have traveled internationally, 42% in the survey have traveled internationally, and they asked those people about their snacking experiences. And among those travelers, 81% said their international travels revealed a new favorite that they otherwise would not have tried. Would never have tried it, now it's a favorite. In fact, the top two things that those respondents look forward to when jet-setting out of the country are trying new things in general. 52% say they like to try new things in general, and 39% want to try new foods specifically. So for a large number of people, that is a definite part of traveling, especially internationally. And among those who have traveled internationally, almost half, 46%, have come to the conclusion that the United States is not even in the top 10 when it comes to the best global food. Not even in the top 10. So if you love American food and don't want your mind changed about that, don't travel to another country, because you might just find that the cuisine is better overseas. Well, as every homeowner knows, getting that perfect lawn isn't easy. We all want it, but truth be told, most of us have no idea how to really make it happen. So joining us this morning with tips and insights are Richard Karn, who you know, of course, from TV's Home Improvement, and Jill Pierce from DoMyOwn.com. And Richard, fans will know you as the ultimate DIY expert, but be honest, do you struggle with this as well? Please tell me you do.
Yes, we all do. I mean, we can't know everything. And, you know, probably more than 70% of the people don't really know what grass they have in their yard. I mean, they inherited from their family or they bought the house. They didn't plant the grass to begin with, so they don't know where to start. And that's where this comes in. I mean, this DoMyOwn.com will help you start a plan on how to tackle your yard.
So what are some of the most common mistakes that you find homeowners will make with their lawns? And how do we avoid those simple ones, those easy ones?
Well, the simple ones is have your plan. You need to know what lawn you're dealing with. Mm-hmm. So that way, you know, fertilizing timing, you know, what weeds to control, you know, all the things stem from what grass am I working with?
Yeah. So Jill, start with some of the basics here. What are a few things that every homeowner should be doing now that spring is here to sort of start to get their lawn into a good shape?
This is an excellent question. We recommend that you start with a pre-emergent herbicide. This is really a must if you want to keep those little weeds from popping up all through your yard. You're going to apply this herbicide early in the spring, and this is really going to stop them in there before they come up. But if you happen to miss the window, you're going to start seeing those weeds soon, but that's okay. You can still apply a post-emergent herbicide to get them while they're young. Next, I would say you're going to want to start with fertilizing in the spring. To figure out what kind of fertilizer you need, you're going to have to start with a soil test. And this is going to tell you exactly what nutrients your lawn is lacking so you can pick the correct fertilizer for your needs. And then last, if your lawn has struggled with fungus or disease in the past, or you have high moisture areas in your yard where fungus likes to thrive, this is a great time to consider putting down a preventative fungicide as well.
So now you, through the platform, through DoMyOwn.com, offer homeowners the products that they need, professional grade products that they need. How are you empowering people to know what they're doing with these and take this idea of lawn care into their own hands?
For sure. Yeah, you're right. We carry thousands of different products. But what we also offer is a library of resources and support to help you every step of the way to take away this confusion that a lot of folks have when they get started.
Right.
If you need help identifying weeds, we have great lawn care guides that can help you with that. If you're using a spreader for the first time and you're not sure how to calibrate it, we have a great how-to video that will walk you through that process. And if you can't find an answer or maybe you just need additional help, we have a full team of customer support experts that you can call, you can get on live chat with, or you can even email them for help.
So basically, this is a platform for everyone who is hearing us talk about this and has no idea about all of the terminology and all of the stuff that we're talking about.
Yeah. You know, we grew up with lawns. So, you know, deep down in our recessed memories, we know basically what to do. We just need a little help sometimes figuring out when and what else do we need to do.
Yeah. Richard, for the DIYer who is just getting started, maybe somebody who's bought their first home and is now worrying about this for the first time, what are some of the things that are must-haves for basic lawn care and lawn maintenance moving through the season here?
Okay. Well, you know, as in anything in life, a good plan. And you can get that plan at DoMyOwn.com. They will help you figure out, you know, what section of the country you're in, what kind of grass you have, when should you fertilize, when should you put down fungicides, all those different things. And then, you know, get yourself a good sprayer and a good granular spreader. Those are two, you know, must-haves to begin figuring out how to take care of your lawn.
And as is always the case, making sure you get good quality products, good quality items It's going to really pay off. May cost a little more up front, will pay off in the long run, as we all know. Again, Richard Karn and Jill Pierce, domyown.com. It's the website is just as simple as that, right?
It absolutely is. Just, you know, go on there and be free. Figure out what you need, and it'll show you.
We will link that up on our webpage so folks can get started on the right foot this lawn care season. Guys, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, we had a great time. Thank you.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. Visit us online at goodmornings.net. Coming up tomorrow on the program, in the wake of reports about the health of former President Biden, what every man needs to know about prostate cancer. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.